All right, we're talking about closing techniques. And these closing techniques, along with the ones that we've introduced up to now, are some of the simplest, the most popular, and the most powerful closing techniques that have ever been developed. And it is up to you to think them through and think how you can use each one of them with your product. You should be able to close 10 different times and use 10 different techniques on the basic objections that you get and with the type of people that you deal with. The secondary close, very popular close. This close involves closing on a minor point in the sales presentation, acceptance of which denotes acceptance of the entire offer. In other words, the person is looking at a refrigerator or a stove or a consumer durable, and you say, would you be wanting this in blue or green? Would you be wanting this delivered, or would you want to take it with you? Which is a secondary consideration. It's not, are you going to take it, yes or no, but how are you going to take it with you? It's focusing the customer's attention off of the major buying decision, relieves the stress and pressure of saying yes or no, and gets it focused on something else. Would you be wanting the regular tires or the radios? You're showing a car to a person. Person can't decide whether or not they're going to take the car. You say, well, with this car, would you want the regular tires or the radios? If the person says, well, I'd want the radios, they've decided to go ahead with it. You will say, well, let's see if we can get this written up right now and get the tires changed. The pressure of the buying decision is passed, and now it's going on to wrap up the details. The alternative close is a very good close to use. You can use it for a thousand reasons. It's always giving the customer a choice between something and something, never a choice between something and nothing. Never say, do you want this or not? So the customer can say either yes or no, but would you like A or B? Would you like one of these or one of those? Would you like a tall one or a short one? Any answer is a yes. Selling past the sale, the assumption close. This close is used to push ahead of events and to assume that the sale has been made, the purchase decision has been made, just to go on to arrange delivery. And you're sitting there and the person hasn't said yes or no, and you said, well, would you like us to deliver this to your home this afternoon, or will tomorrow be all right? And the person says, well, if I can get it today, I'd appreciate it. Fine, well, let's put it through right now and just start filling out the documentation. Or another example is, which one will you be taking today? Would you like it gift-wrapped? Or the perfect one is, will that be cash or chargex? Or will that be cash or credit card? Whenever they ask you that, it's not whether you're going to be taking it or not, but just how you're going to be paying for it. And go on to wrap it up. The assumption close is very powerful because it helps people get over that moment of indecision. Let me say one more thing with regard to closing, is that when you finish your presentation, you must change and go smoothly into the close. You don't sit there and have a breather, if you like. You don't sit there and rest as though you've just had a round in the ring, if you like, and you're sitting there in opposite corners. As you get to the end of your presentation, you go smoothly into the close, and you know at each step you're going to be bringing out the purchase order or the contract or the proposal or whatever it happens to be. You're going to be giving the person the proposal to sign. You must know where you are. Very much like a stage play. You notice, like a stage play or a movie, the climax, the end, the conclusion is very carefully planned, and everything is planned up to it. They don't figure it out anew each time they show the play or play the movie. It's like singing a song. The end of the song is very carefully thought out, and every single singer sings it the same. When you come to a close, you must know exactly where it is and just switch into the close as automatically as you would turn down your own street in a car. The takeaway close is also very powerful. It's a variation on the selling past the sale close or the assumption close. And what you do is, when the person is hesitating, you halt the presentation. You say, oh, just a minute, before we go any further. This is when the person is obviously hasn't made up their mind. Let's make sure we can get this model for you. Let's make sure we have this in your size. Let's make sure we have it in your color. If you're talking to a businessman, you say, before we go any further, let me call the warehouse and make sure we have this item in stock. We've had a tremendous rush on these the last little while. We may be out. And if the person gives you the permission to call the warehouse, he's decided to buy. A variation of this, too, is, let me go and check with my manager and see if we can arrange immediate delivery. Can you wait here for a second? The person will say, sure, you go and check with your manager. Or you could even do it better. You can say, why don't you come with me to my manager and I'll see if we can't arrange immediate delivery. And if the person will come with you to your manager to arrange immediate delivery, which you know you can offer, then they've decided to buy. The takeaway close, by the way, is used on ladies all the time. It's one of the most famous techniques in ladies' boutiques. The woman is hemming and hawing. I don't know if I can afford it. I don't know if my husband will like it, and so on and so forth. The person says, just a minute, before we go any further, let me check and make sure we have it in your size. And if you say, yes, check and make sure you have it in my size, you've decided to buy. And you notice they always come back and they have one left in your size? We have just one left, right? They do this to us all the time. When you're looking at buying a car, you say, is this the car you like? They say, well, this one is sold. I'll see if we can get another one of these in. I see if there's one coming in on the truck. Can you wait here for a second? They say, oh, yeah, check for me. And they go and check. They say, you're in luck. There's just one. And it's coming in the day after tomorrow. Let's get it written up right now because those people over there, they point to somebody at the other end of the showroom, they're also looking at the same one. And you say, oh, geez. And you don't even know how much you wanted it until they suggest that they're going to take it away. Now, I told you about this, and I told you about this, and how this works, and how this will benefit you, and so on, and go right down the list and say, have we covered everything? You see, each time you itemize a feature and point out the benefit that the customer will enjoy, his desire or her desire to purchase the product goes up. At the end of this, if the customer says, no, I can't think of anything else, you say, well, let's go ahead and write this up right now. When would you like to take delivery? And you just take out your order form and begin filling it out. The summary close is excellent. When you make a detailed list of every benefit the customer will ever enjoy from the product, then rank them in order of importance and plan your presentation to introduce them in order. Watch for the one or two benefits that seem to be of greatest interest and repeat them over and over again, as we know. Well, the puppy dog close is another close that sometimes you can use. The puppy dog close sells billions of dollars worth of products every year. And what it involves is letting the prospect touch, taste, feel, hold, try out the product or service. I knew one company that sold office equipment. They sold more office equipment than any other company in the city. And you know how they did it? Very simple. They had one thing. They hired salespeople with little or no experience. It didn't matter. Their job was to go out and talk people into taking their machinery into the office for a week's trial. That's all they did. They had literally hundreds of pieces of expensive equipment. They had a one whole department that did nothing but take the equipment out on trial. They found that if you could just get people to use the machine for a month or a week or even shorter period of time, that the incidence for people who would decide to purchase it rather than do without it was so high, that's all they had to do. They were just basically order takers, and they were fantastically successful. So if you have a product that a person can test drive, can try out, can take home, can use, the puppy dog close comes from the famous ploy of the pet shop owner, who the parents come in, usually against their will, because the children want a puppy. We want a puppy. We want a puppy so badly. We've seen puppies in the movies and puppies in the television. So finally, on a Saturday, the parents come down with the children to show them the puppies. And the pet shop owner is no fool. He knows the reluctance. The parents don't want to get stuck with the dog. So he says, look, he said, before you make a decision, why don't you take the dog home, take this beautiful, soft little puppy home for the weekend, and see how it works out, and if you don't like it, you can bring it back on Monday. So they take the puppy home. By the time Sunday afternoon comes, what has happened? The kids have grown tired of the dog and are off doing something else. By Sunday night, the parents have fallen in love with the dog. And Monday, the parents go back and buy the dog and take it home and end up taking care of it. One of the best puppy dog closes I've ever seen was a fellow who sold recreational vehicles, expensive motorhomes, $30,000 and up. And what he would do when he found somebody who was really interested in a recreational vehicle, he would arrange to take them out for lunch to talk to them about the vehicle. But he would pick them up at their home and he would drive up in a $50,000 motorhome. He would bring them out. He would open the door for them. They'd climb in. They'd sit down. Beautiful. He'd drive them to a park on the edge of the city overlooking a lake and looking off across the foothills at the mountains. And he'd swing into that park so that the dining table inside the motorhome faced out on this beautiful view. And then he'd open up the microwave and he'd have food all prepared. He'd have a bottle of wine and ice. He'd open the wine. He'd put glasses on the table. He'd lay out the food on china. And they're sitting there, not a sound, soft stereo music in the back. This beautiful view overlooking the lake, birds flying, the mountains in the distance. He said, isn't that beautiful? Now, isn't that what you want? People sit there and they have a couple of glasses of wine. They said, Harry, this is exactly what we want. What are we waiting for? Wouldn't it be nice to be able to do this whenever you want it? Come home in the evening on a summer day and just go out and park. Or go off on a trip on the weekend and have your own moving home, just like this. He sold more motorhomes than anybody else in his city. Even in depressions, even when interest rates were 21%, he was the highest selling salesman because he gave them an opportunity to feel what the product would be like. So if you have a product that is like that, by all means, do everything possible to give people an opportunity to experience it. The Ben Franklin close is considered by many to be the very best close of all. Everybody's heard of it. I've taught this close in this course many times, and people say, oh, there's that old Ben Franklin close. Everybody's heard about the Ben Franklin close. And the reason it's so powerful is this, is that the close involves the thinking process that we always go through before we buy something, which is we weigh the pros and we weigh the cons and we try to come to a decision. Now, most of us do this in a very fuzzy way. We do it all jumbled up in our heads. The Ben Franklin close relates back to Ben Franklin's decision-making method. And you can say like this, Mr. Prospect, you want to make the best decision in this situation, don't you? And especially if there's a lot of details involved. And he says, yes, of course I do. You say, well, let's use the Ben Franklin decision-making method. Now, Ben Franklin used to use this to weigh and balance and make good decisions. And he was one of the best decision makers of his time. The first self-made millionaire in America, one of the most famous inventors, politicians, and scholars of his time. And what he would do is he would take a piece of paper, and you take out a piece of paper, draw a line down the center, and on one side you write reasons in favor of going ahead with this decision, and on the other side you write reasons opposed. And you say, now let's look at the reasons why this may be of advantage to you. And then you reiterate the reasons in conjunction with him, and you write them down. And you reiterate every benefit that you can think of in your product or service, and you write it down. As a matter of fact, you should probably do this in advance so that you've got it practiced, so that if you ever get into this close, you can use it without any difficulty or hesitation at all. You say, now, is that everything? And you ask the person if he can think of any more. He says, no, I can't think of any more reasons in favor. You say, well, all right, Mr. Prospect, now you fill out the other side, and you hand him the pen and the pad, and you give it to him. And you let him fill out the reasons opposed all by himself. And what he'll do is he'll say, well, there's this. There's the price, of course, and there's, we'd have to replace the old machine, and there's this. At the very most, the smartest prospect I've ever seen could ever come up with is three. And then you look at it and you say, well, Mr. Prospect, it looks like you've made your decision. I had a good friend of mine, I met him on the plane. He's a commercial real estate agent. He was working on a complex real estate deal involving a trade for cash and land and commercial buildings with a large financial institution and a real estate conglomerate. And he said he was sitting down with the vice president. They've been going back and forth on this for 2 or 3 weeks with the vice president of this financial institution, and they weren't getting anywhere. And finally, he had been through this course. He said, well, why don't we use the Ben Franklin decision-making method? He thought, what the heck? He said, let's lay out the pros and cons of this for your organization on two sides of a sheet of paper. And he sat down and he went through this exactly like this. And then he said, now you write out the reasons opposed. And the executive sat down and wrote 2 or 3, and he looked at both lists, and the salesman said, well, it looks like you've made your decision. And he said, you're right, I have. Let's go with it. And they signed it up. He had just done this the day before. I met him on the plane. He said, Brian, he said, I was amazed at how well that worked. It was so simple. He said, I've heard about it for years, but I had never tried it. He said, I earned more commission putting that deal together than I earned in the previous year. And it was something like, I think it was $35,000 worth of commission he earned just on that one transaction. Well, another close is the order sheet close. And there's 2 or 3 variations of the order sheet close. But the first one is when the prospect comes in or when you begin talking with the prospect for the first time, wherever it's possible, you simply take out an order sheet or a sales contract or whatever you use and start filling it out. The easiest way is to take it out and write the date boldly so the person can see you're writing on the order form. Now, sometimes the person will say, hey, wait a minute. Oh, hey, I'm not ready to go ahead yet. I just want to get some information. You say, don't worry about this. I have a terrible memory for details, and I like to write everything down. If you decide not to go ahead today, it'll be all right. We'll just throw the order form away, okay? Okay, and you just keep on writing. Every time the person says, well, probably blue or 2x4, write it down in the order sheet. So the person gets used to seeing you write out the details on the order sheet. Every single time you write one of their details on the order sheet, it becomes personalized for them. It becomes one of their personal possessions. So eventually the person begins to identify with the order sheet, and finally at the end of the sales transaction you say, by the way, what is the exact spelling of your last name? J-O-N-E-S, Jones. Thank you very much. And you just write down the last name and your first name and initial. Once they give you the spelling of the last name, they've decided to go ahead with the order. Many people don't use this close, and I don't know why, because I've used it under very sophisticated conditions to sell hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of investments, and I've always been astonished at how easy it is. Mr. Prospect, what's the exact spelling of your last name? If they give you the spelling of the last name, they've decided to go ahead. And the other variation is simply to take out the order form or the contract or the order blank at the end of the discussion and begin filling it out. Write in the date and say, what is the exact mailing address here? They'll give you the mailing address, they've decided to go ahead. It's as simple as that. It's a very easy way to go from the end of the presentation through the close. And once they've given you either the name or the mailing address, then it's just simply a matter of filling out the rest of the details on the form. The relevant story close, we've talked about this before. The relevant story close is very powerful because people think in terms of stories. And what it simply is a matter of telling a story about a happy client that you have had that followed your advice and was in the same position of hesitancy as your client, the one who's sitting here in front of you, but followed your advice anyway and went ahead with it and bought the product and was very, very happy. Let me give you an example from the insurance industry. I have a friend who's a very successful insurance agent, one of the top in the country, in fact. And he has a statement from the court that processed the estate of a man that was worth $1.5 million. And this statement has the names blanked out and everything. And it shows that this person died with $1.5 million in assets. But by the time taxes and legal fees and probate fees and intestate fees and everything had eaten up this account, his wife was left with $21,000 because he had no insurance. There was capital gains taxes, there was inheritance taxes, there were sales taxes, there were deferred taxes, there were taxes on tax. He said by the time it was over, his wife was left penniless. He died when he was something like 57, his wife was 53. She had $21,000 left for the rest of her life. He said this person thought that because he had this big asset base, he didn't need insurance. A person says, well, I don't need insurance because I've got assets. They say, well, by the way, you know, there was this fellow in Montana, and this is what happened to him, and they pull this out. Because it's a relevant story, the person can relate to that story. They can say, geez, yes, that might happen to me. Everything might be taken by taxes. It might take 5 years before my wife got any of this money, even if it wasn't taken by taxes. And it's a very, very powerful story to close an insurance policy. When a person is trying to sell a car, when a person is trying to sell blueprint printing services or industrial chemicals or artwork, for instance, we talked about how do you sell art. A person says, well, gee, that's very expensive. You said, yes, good art is expensive, and the only thing that makes it worthwhile buying good art is the speed with which it can appreciate. That if you buy this piece of artwork, there's no guarantee, but it's not uncommon to see a piece of art like this appreciate by 50, 60, 70% in a year. A perfect example is the work of Fafard. Perfect example. From Saskatchewan, making those little statues. 10, 20 years ago, nobody heard about him. Now his statues are literally priceless. I have a friend who bought one for, I think, $600. Now it's worth 10, 20, 30 times that. When you're selling something, tell a relevant story about somebody else who hesitated also, but decided to go ahead. And look what happened to them. Or a relevant story about somebody who decided not to buy it, and look at what unfortunate consequences ensued. The walkaway close. Now, these three closes are very good, especially in retail. The first of the walkaway closes is that when a person says, well, I'd like to shop around, I'd like to go somewhere else, I'd like to see someone else, I'd like to check your prices with your competition, and so on. What you do is you say, look, Mr. Prospect, we've been doing business here for many years. Most of our customers are repeat customers, and many of our customers come from referrals from repeat customers. And every one of them have shopped all over town before they finally came back here and bought. Now, why put yourself to all that trouble and go all over the place to try to find a better price? Why don't you make a decision right now, and we can wrap it up for you and get it loaded in your car this minute, or we can have it out to you tomorrow morning. You see, it's a very good reason. You must give the person a good reason for not shopping around, not going through those hours of agony, going door to door and pillar to post, trying to find a better price. Give them a good reason, and a logical reason is that everybody who shops here has already done that for you. Why should you go and spend all that time, waste all that time shopping around, because you'll end up back here anyway, just as our other customers have. Well, let us say that the person says, well, I really still think I should go and check because I'm not sure that this is the best deal and so on. You get people who are shoppers. Then you use an incentive. And the incentive is what is called the today only close. You say, Mr. Prospect, I'll tell you what. This is the end of our fiscal period, or this is the end of a sales contest, or we have only one or two of these items in stock, or we're just getting a whole load of new stock in tomorrow. And if you will take it tonight, I'll probably be able to get you an extra $25 off on this item or whatever it happens to be. Since this is our last item, or we're going to have a price increase. We had a price increase last week. If you take it now, I can get it for you at the previous price. And give them a very strong incentive for making a decision now, a reason to buy this minute rather than to put it off any longer. And finally, if the person's absolutely convinced that they have to go and shop prices, they have to talk to other people, they have to go somewhere else, then you use what is called the go-ahead close. And very graciously you concede. You don't argue with them anymore. You don't try to get them to make a decision. You say, Mr. Prospect, I understand how you feel, and I think it's a good idea that you go and check prices in other places. But I want you to promise me one thing, is that before you make a decision, come back and see me, and I'll give you the best deal in town. Now, the person is now stuck, because if they are one of these people who has to shop everywhere, they're going to go every single place in town, but in the back of their mind, they're going to be remembering that statement from you that before they make a decision, they have to come back and see you because you're going to give them the best deal in town. Don't give them a final price. Sometimes they say, well, what is the final price? What is the last price? You say, well, I'll have to talk to my manager, and I'll have to check with the boss, and we'll have to go through the books and everything else. So I can't give you that now, but you go and get the very best price that you can anywhere else, and then you come back to me and I'll give you the best deal in town. When they finally come back, they say, well, these are the best prices I can get. Can you beat it? If you can beat them on price, then by all means do so. If you can't, then you can put together a package which includes the item plus what you'll throw in plus the warranty, service, delivery, and so on, and you put it all up and you write it all out and you say, Mr. Prospect, this is the best deal you can get. And if he or she says, but that's higher price than what I can get it for over at XYZ Company, say, Mr. Prospect, it's a higher price, but this includes the warranty, the service, the delivery, the setup, and so on and so forth, and it is the best deal you can get overall anywhere in town. Then the person has the choice of either buying it right there or then going back with your final offer and shopping that all over town. And then you say, why don't you give us a try? Why don't we wrap this up right now? What is the exact spelling of your last name? When would you like to have it delivered? And you go straight into another close. These are very, very powerful, and it's amazing, especially if you're in retail business, it's amazing how important it is that you have these walk-away closes, that you have the ability to say something to the prospect to get them to either make a decision now or be sure to come back to you before they buy it from somewhere else. The lost sale close, which is called the doorknob close. Anybody heard of this one? It's a very powerful close. It's after you've tried to sell somebody something, and they obviously won't buy it, and they are resisting you in every way, and they've got a hidden objection. They won't tell you what it is. You finally say, okay, and gracefully you say, Mr. Prospect, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. I've taken too much of your time. I hope I can get back to you a little bit later with some more information on this. And they'll always say, yes, yes, and they're happy. You're leaving now. Oh, thank heavens. Their mind starts to go to what they're going to do as soon as you're out of sight, and their sales resistance begins to drop like a thermometer on a cold day. Then you say, thank you, and I appreciate it, and you pack up your stuff, and you get up, and you walk, and as you put your hand on the doorknob with your briefcase in your hand or whatever it is, you turn around and you say, Mr. Prospect, just before I go, may I ask you one question? I've tried to present my product information the best way I know how, and I'm not very experienced in this business. I'd really appreciate it if you just tell me this. What was the real reason you didn't buy today? And invariably, the person sitting there, comfortable, no pressure, mind on something else, they say, well, I'll tell you, this is the real reason. And they will give you the final objection. And then you say, oh, Mr. Prospect, you mean I didn't explain that to you properly? Oh, that's my fault, doggone it. And you walk right back in. This will just take one more second. And you sit down, you open up your briefcase, and you start closing on that final objection. He says, well, the reason I didn't buy was because I'm really not convinced that that machine will produce the kind of copies that we require. Mr. Prospect, you mean I didn't explain that properly? We have a warranty and a guarantee that covers that. And if we could get you that, would you be willing to go ahead right now? And you just sit right in there and close again. But now you have no sales resistance. Very powerful close. And finally, closing on referrals. I cannot stress this more strongly. Every single customer or non-customer, buyer or non-buyer, is a source of referrals. And getting referrals requires a method. A referral is worth 10 to 15 times a cold call. When you get a referral, you are piggybacking on the credibility of the person that referred you. You can get in to see anybody if you have a referral from somebody who knows them closely. So when you are talking about referrals, what you do is this. The person has either bought or not bought. It could even be somebody that's bought in the past, and you can go back and call on them. I have a very good friend here in town who is a very smart salesperson. In the first month of each year, after Christmas and New Year and everything, he goes and he visits every single customer of the last year. And he drops in on them, and he calls in, and he says, "How are you doing? How's everything going? Having any problems? Anything I can help you with? Are you satisfied with the service? Is the product working out?" He just does a social call, not to sell them anything. And if they have any complaints, he jots it down and promises to take care of it. If they're happy, he thanks them very much. And then before he goes, he said, "By the way, we're starting off in a new year. Who else do you know who might be interested in this product or service this year?" And people say, "Well," and after a nice 10, 15-minute talk, they say, "Why don't you call Bill Smith and so-and-so? I talked to him over the holidays," and they'll give you names and addresses and phone numbers of people that they know. In any case, this is the way that you get referrals. You say, "Mr. Prospect," and this is a series of closing techniques. "Mr. Prospect," or "Mr. Customer," however it is, "would you happen to know two or three other people that I could talk to who might be interested in this product or service too, whether they take the product or not?" Well, the person will say, "Yeah, I may know a couple of people." In other words, this is an alternative close. You said, "Would you know two or three?" They'll choose two. You say, "I would really appreciate it if I could get their names." And the person will say, "Well, call Bill Smith or Tom Jones." All right, you write the names down. You say, "Would you happen to have their telephone numbers handy?" Now, they always do, because they'll almost invariably refer people they know very closely. They'll give you the phone numbers from their book, and you write down the phone numbers. And you say, "Mr. Prospect, of these two, which one do you think I should call on first?" And they'll say, "Well, probably old Bill, because he's just opened a new office," and so on. And so, "Mr. Prospect, would you do me a favor? Would you call Bill and tell him that I'm coming over to see him to talk to him about this?" Now, you see, he said, "Yes, yes, 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 yes." He said about five yes. "Yes, I can give you two. Yes, here's two names. Yes, here's two telephone numbers. Yes, Bill is the best." And he'll pick up the telephone and he'll call up Bill and he'll say, "Look, Tom Smith is coming over to show you something that I just found very interesting. I think you should talk to him." That's basically what the conversation will be. And when you go over to see him, you go right past the secretary, they sit you down, give you a cup of coffee and say, "What have you got?" And you're right into it. And it's better to do that than to spend all day cold calling looking for people that you've never talked to before. If you get referrals properly and you develop a referral generating system by closing on referrals in each case, you will never have to make cold calls after the first 30 or 60 days in your field. You never should have to. If you're still making cold calls, it just simply means that you're not getting enough referrals. They find that in insurance, if a person can go out and talk to 10 people that they know, get five names each, and from those keep getting two names from each one, they never have to cold call again.